We're holding on Kuf Mem He Amud Aleph, the fourth line. We looked in the Mishnah about the concept of Shushvinus. A Shushvin means a good friend, and Shushvinus was kind of almost like a mutual aid society for weddings. It's expensive to make a wedding, so what you'd have is good friends of the chosen would come and attend the wedding and bring presents with them, which would help offset some of the costs of the wedding. And then the expectation was eventually, when the friend himself gets married, then the one who previously was given then the ones who previously were given these gifts will reciprocate. So this whole system is called Shushvinus, and so we mentioned in the Mishnah, it came up in connection with the dinim of Yerusha. We said that if a father sent that if a that if, we said that if brother if some of the brothers did Shushvinus when the father was alive, then it returns to the whole family. And we discussed in the Gemara that it depends. It depends whether the father sent it in the name of one of his sons or whether he sent it in the name of the family in general. The last thing we pointed out is you have a concept called tnuli shushvini ve'esmach imoy. You can have a case where a person sent or a person sent his shushvinos. He sent his money for the shushvinos, and he himself participated in the wedding. Now, though, he passed away, and the other person is able to say, you know what? As far as I'm concerned, I would have been happy to join in his chasana and pay towards it, just like he did for mine. But unfortunately, he passed away. So if you were to give me my shushvin, I would be happy with him. Meaning, in other words, therefore, you can't hold me responsible the fact that he's not available. And we said it's true. On the other hand, if they did go through the sheva brachas and then the chosen passed away, and meanwhile the friend didn't have the chance to pay the shushvinus because he didn't bring it with him to the wedding, then yes, he is going to have to pay it afterwards because at that point he already did join in the simcha. Therefore, he already fulfilled. He started already fulfilling that obligation, and now he has to and ate some of the food that the guy served, which we're going to talk about more about that, about the cost of the food versus the cost of the shushvinus. We're going to discuss that a little more on Amud Beis. In any case, then yes, then he would have to pay it, even though the guy passed away already. So then we can discuss the question who it goes to among the brothers. We said if one of the brothers is doing yibum with his with the wife of the one who passed away, then yes, that brother. Well, so we said actually the brother is not going to inherit it exclusively because that would be an example of roi. That would be property that is not in his possession right now when he passes away. It's only something that's going to be coming later, and a yavam doesn't get the whole thing of that. So in this connection, we had mentioned also a case called tnuli baili ve'esmachimoy. You have a case where a woman has received money for kiddushin, and now and her chosen passed away. Does she have to return? Where the idea with the kiddushin, after all, is that eventually there's going to be a wedding, and here there's not going to. So, nevertheless, she can say, "Tnuli baili ve'esmachimoy." As far as I'm concerned, I would have been willing to go ahead with the wedding. It's not my fault that he passed away, and therefore I shouldn't have to return the kiddushin money. Well, the Gemara says, "Lema tnuli baili ve'esmachimoy tanoihi." Should we have to say that this point about whether she can say, "Give me my husband, and I would rejoice with him"? In other words, and since he's not available, it's not my fault, and I shouldn't have to pay back the kiddushin money. Should we say tanoihi that this seems to be a machlokas tanoi? B'tanya, we learn in a brisa, ha'ma'aris a man does erusin, he does kiddushin with a woman, and he and now the Gemara doesn't mention that he wrote out that he wrote out a ksuba for her. However, the Rashbam says we have to say that it is because here we're going to be discussing whether the ksuba has to be paid off. If no ksuba was even written during the erusin, then the Gemara discusses in ksubas whether in fact she is entitled to a ksuba, and it doesn't answer. So here we're saying as a given that she is that on that she is chayev that she is entitled to collect the ksuba. We have to be talking about that he already wrote out a ksuba intending for it to take effect during the erusin. So he was ma'ariser. So now b'sula gover masayim v'almona mona. So now, if she's a psula, then she collects 200 zuz for huksuba, and if she's an almana, then she collects 100 like usual. Because again, he wrote out a ksuba intending for it already to be in effect during the erusin. What happens as far as what about as far as the kiddushin money? Mokum shenogu lahachse in a place where they have the minhag to return the money of kiddushin if they didn't end up getting married, machzirin, then they return it. Kiddushin, if it's a place where they don't have where makom shenagu shaloi lahachse kiddushin ein machzir, in a place where they don't have the minhag to return it, then they don't have to return it. Divrei Reb Nosson. That's what Reb Nosson says. The Yad Ramah points out. Now everybody agrees if they were to get married and then they and then they got divorced or widowed or whatever, for sure that doesn't have to be repaid because the whole point was that the Kiddushin implicitly is a deal, we're going to get married. And the fact is, they did go through with it, they did get married. So the question is over here, where the Chosin died, where the Chosin died or the Kala died before the Nisuin, as we're going to work out in the Gemara. So Reb Nosson says that, Reb Nosson says the Ksuba is paid off, and as far as the Kiddushin, it depends on the local minhag. Rabbi Yehuda HaNossi, Be'emes Amru, Rabbi Yehuda HaNossi says, they said, and whenever we have the expression Be'emes Amru, means it's a halacha l'moshe Sinai, or sometimes it means, as in a case like this, it means it's a very, very strongly established halacha, as if it was halacha l'moshe Sinai. Makom shenagu l'hachzu machzirin, makom shenagu shalai l'hachzu ein machzirin. That in a place where the minhag is to return the kedushin money in such a case, then you return it, and if not, then not. Thus far the Braisa. Now, we have to understand Rabbi Yehuda HaNossi, Hainu Tanakama. What is Rabbi Yehuda HaNossi adding? He's saying exactly the same thing as Rabbi Nosson, the Tanakama. Ela lav tnuli baili ve'esmachima ike benayhu. Evidently, the machlokas between them must be on whether we say this point of tnuli baili ve'esmachima can she say I would have been willing to go through with the marriage? It's not my fault that it can't be done because my chosin passed away. I shouldn't have to therefore return the kiddushin money. So evidently that would be the machlokas v'chasuri machzera, and we would say then that the braisa is missing words v'hachi katani. What it means to say is like this: Hamaaris is a isha. He did erusin. He was makadish a woman. B'sula gover masayim v'almana mana. If she's a b'sula, then she can collect 200 for huksuba. If she's an almana, 100 mana. 100 zuz. When would that apply? Here's the part that's missing from the braisa: is if he backed out, if he broke off the kedushin and decided instead to divorce her. So he divorced her, or he died, or whatever. Aval mesa. But if she died, then makom shenagu l'hachzu machzirin, makom shenagu l'hachzu ein machzirin. Then it depends whether the local minhag is to return the kedushin money or not. The davka shemesa he. But again, this would be what the braisa is missing: that this only applies if she died. Aval meshu. But if the chosin died, ein machzirin. Then you wouldn't have to return the kedushin money regardless. My timer. Why? Yecholi yishtema tnuli bayli ve'es machima. Because Reb Nosson would say, look, she could say, if my husband was available, then I would be mesameach with him. And the fact that he's not is not a reason that I should have to return the kedushin money. So evidently he holds of that concept of tzuli baili ve'esmachimai. V'osu Reb Yehuda HaNossi le'meimar. And then along comes Reb Yehuda HaNossi and says, be'emes amru, that in truth they said, meaning this is a very strongly established halacha, no, bein meshu, bein meisahi, whether the chosin died, whether the kala died, mokum shenagu l'hachzu machzirin, mokum shenagu l'hachzu ein machzirin, then it depends on the local minhag, whether to return it or not. V'loi matzya amet tzuli baili ve'esmachimai, meaning that she doesn't have the ability to say, give me my husband and I will rejoice with him. Rabbi Yehuda HaNossi says that in a place where the minhag is to return the kedushin money, then she's going to have to return it. She can say, it's not my fault. I was ready to get married and it's not my fault. And it's not my fault that my chosin passed away. Nevertheless, Rebbe would say, it doesn't matter. She still has to return it anyway. So it would come out, if we understand the braisa that way, that the point about tnuli baili ve'esmachimoy is subject to a machlokas tanoim. Reb Nosson would say that even in a place where they return the kedushin money when the kedushin was broken off, it wouldn't apply when he passed away. And according to Rebbe, it does. So is that what it means? But the Gemara says loy, not necessarily. Dekula alma. And by the way, Tosfos points out, you always have a rule that when you have two tanoim and it doesn't specify in what the second one argues with the first one, and we have to figure it out for ourselves with chasuri mechzer or whatever, we have a general rule that the second one is coming to add something to the first one. So therefore, so, uh, So therefore, it must be that if the if Reb Nosson is saying that there are cases where she wouldn't have to return the kedushin money, then Rebbe must be adding and saying actually there are cases even like that where she would have to, because that would be adding something to what the Tanakhama, to what Reb Nosson had said. Anyway, so if we understand like that, then yes, this point about tnuli baili ve'esmachimoy is actually a machlokas tanoim. Maybe then it would also apply to tnuli shushvini ve'esmachimoy. Maybe it would also apply to the case of shushvinus, and we would say that in the same way we would say that that he's entitled to say I shouldn't have to pay back the shushvinus because my friend passed away and now I don't have to give him the shushvinus money anymore, and I don't have to pay it back to any of you anyway. So is that what it is? The Gemara says, the Gemara says, loy, not necessarily. No, because both Reb Nosson and Rebbe might agree that she could say that, and therefore that I don't have to return the kedushin money. So, demishu kula alma loy pligi. So if the chosen dies, then everybody would agree that she doesn't have to return the kedushin money. Ki pligi shemesahi, the machlokas would be specifically when she died, and now the husband is going to her yorshim, to her father or brothers or whoever, and saying that I want my kiddushin money back. And the machlokas would be v'hocha b'kiddushin l'tibuin nitnu kamifigi. The machlokas would be, do we say that kiddushin money is given l'tibuin, the tibuin meloshin tova, like to be drowned or sunk in place? In other words, do we say that the kiddushin money is given in a way where it's expected to be sunken in place, and therefore that her family gets to keep it, whether the wedding actually took place or not? So Reb Nosson saw the kedushin lav l'tibuin nitnu. Reb Nosson would hold that no, it's not meant to be an irrevocable thing. So if she dies, then her family has to return it. Reb Yehuda Anasi saw the kedushin l'tibuin nitnu. Whereas Rebbe would hold that you do have to return it. So in that case, so that would be the machlokas. So in other words, but if the chosen died, then both of them, both Reb Nosson and Rebbe, would agree that she doesn't have to return the kedushin money. And again, applied to the case of shushvinus, would also mean that the shushvin doesn't have to repay the money because the friend himself who gave him the wedding present originally has passed away. The Gemara asks, what do you mean, though? The Braisa says, in a place, even in Rabbi Yehuda Anasi's opinion, it says, in a place where they usually return the Kedushin money, then they have to return it. If Rebbe holds Kedushin l'tibuin nitnu, then why is there, then what do we care what the local minig is? The fact is that Kedushin are given as an irrevocable thing. And the answer is Hochi Karma. What it means to say is, as far as that part, Nwakam Shinagu Lahaksu Machzirin, is we're not talking about the Kedushin money. According to Rebbe, the Kedushin money is always gone if the Kala passes away. But what the Braisa means is Vesiv Loinus. Now, when it comes to the sivloinus, which are after the kedushin, before the Nisuin, the Chosin usually sends his Kala presents. Those presents are called sivloinus. In a somewhat similar way, as you have in our parasha, you have after Eliezer is Makadesh Rivka. Then the pasuk says he took out things and gave them to Rivka and to her family. So those are more in the nature of sivloinus. So as far as the sivloinus, vade makom shenargo lahachsu machzirin, then definitely in a place where the minig is to return things, then those are returned because the sivloinus, everybody would agree, are not given the tibuin. They're not meant as an irrevocable thing. They're meant to continue as a continuation of the kedushin. And if there's no kedushin anymore because she passed away, then they do have to be returned. So the Gemara points out v'hani tanoi kahani tanoi. Once we understand the machlokas that way, that they're not really arguing about the kedushin money, that we would say. We'd have so far as follows: Reb Nosson and Rebbe are arguing about the kedushin money when the chosen passed away. When the kala passed away, when the chosen passes away, they both agree she does not have to return it because she can say tuli bailiv esmachimoy. When she passes away, then you have the machlokas whether the kedushin money has to be returned or not. And then you also have the sivloinus. We're saying regardless have to be given back because that's the whole point of sivloinus was meant to be as a in preparation for the wedding, and now the wedding is not going to be taking place. So, which, by the way, you have the Rambam points out in this connection, if the Kiddushin were Kiddushik Tos, if there was some kind of mistake, for example, there was a Tanai which didn't end up getting fulfilled or whatever, then it does get returned because then that's based on other Gemaras, because then it means that the whole Kiddushin was based on a mistaken premise. So the Gemara points out for Hani Tanoi Kahani Tanoi. You should know these Tanoim who argue about this point, Rebbe and Reb Nosson, Kahani Tanoi is just like another machlokas, is just like machlokas between a previous generation of Tanoim on this point. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Kidsha B'Kikar. Suppose that the husband was Makadish, a woman with a kicker. Which the Rashbam explains that so we have a kicker, we have in Tanakh. Here the Rashbam explains that a kicker is 25 mona, which is to say a mona is 100 zuz, so 25 mona would be 2500 zuz. There are other places where it comes out that a mona is 60 zuz, which would be 3000 shekel. So 3,000 sloyim. So maybe it says on the side over here, maybe it's a toast force. Maybe it's a mistake and it's supposed to be 60. Whatever. Basula gover masayim va'amona mona. A basula is going to collect out of that kicker, is going to keep the 200 zuz or an amona amona, because that's she's going to be entitled to collect that amount from her for her ksuba. So aside from the kiddushin, actually, the Rashbam explains it means that. First we're going to learn the brisa, then the Gemara is going to work out the details about it. But so far, what it sounds like it means that aside from the kicker that she received as kiddushin, which is of course far more than needs to be done. Kiddushin needs to be done with only a pruta, and here he gave her a mana, which is whether we say 25 or 60, whether we say it's 25 or 60 mana, which is to say then is it 60 mana again would be 60 mana would mean it's 3000 would be it's 3000 sloyim, 25 would be it's 1200, whatever, it's a far more than a pruta. Nevertheless, it sounds like the Braisa is saying she's collecting that, plus on top of that she's collecting her 200 zuz for kedushin. Give it a mayor, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Basula Gover Masayim Valmana Mana, and Rabbi Yehuda says she's collecting the 200 or the 100 for Basula and Amana respectively. But she takes that from within the kicker that she received for Kedushin, or Machzeras Loyas Hashar, and she returns him the rest. So we see so far that they're arguing whether Kedushin, the Tibur Nitnu, because according to the mayor, we're saying that the Kedushin is. Seems to be an irrevocable thing, that it's not given back no matter what. So therefore she's not only entitled to keep that, but again, if we're talking about there was only Erusin and a Ksuba was already written and during the time of the Erusin and meant to take effect then on top of that, Rameir says she's collecting a Ksuba, whereas Rabbi Yehuda is saying that not. Then we have a third opinion, which we're going to explain why these various opinions hold what they do. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kidsha Be'esrim Noisim L'Shloshim Chatzoyim. Rabbi Yossi says, if he was Makadosh with 20, then he gives her back 30 halves, which we're going to explain soon what we mean by that. And if he was Makadosh with 30, then he gives her back 20 halves. So what do we mean by 30 and 20 and halves and things like that? The Gemara is going to explain soon what it means. And we're also going to explain why he mentions it in terms of halves. Why doesn't he just say that if he was Mekadosher with 20, then he returns her 15, and if he was Mekadosher with 30, then he returns her 10. So we'll explain all of that soon. So let's figure out what the Braisa means. But Maya Skinnon, what is the scenario that the Braisa is talking about? Elema Shemesa, are we talking about that the Kala died after the Erisin, before the Nisuin? So the question is, why would why would Rabbi Yehuda say that she collects uksuba? Mi isla ksuba? Does she get a ksuba in that case? He's not required to pay he's not required to pay the ksuba in that case. Because there wasn't even nisuin yet. The El Shemeshu, are we talking about the Chosin died? Amai Machzeres Lo Yisashar. Why should she need to return him the rest of the Kiddushin money? V'nema Tznuli Baili V'esmachimai. Why wouldn't she be able to say, give me back my husband and I'll rejoice with him, meaning I'm ready to go on to the next stage to Nisuin, and it's not my fault that he's not here. So we must say that we're talking about that. No, we're not talking about anybody died. We're talking about her husband is still alive, but we're talking about her chosen is Yisrael, and she was Mizana. So now he's obligated to divorce her, but he still has to pay her ksuba. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying that she has to return the rest of the money of the kiddushin. Sure, she can collect uksuba, but she'll collect out of that amount of kiddushin, but the rest of it she has to return to him. Now we have to figure out what's the case. When is there that if she's mizana, she's collecting uksuba? Obamai, iberotzen, if she was mizana willingly, mi isla ksuba, does she get a ksuba b'chlal? She doesn't get a ksuba in that case. The Ella Ba'onis, are we talking about that she was raped? Then Mishra Shavyele, then her husband is a Yisrael, and anyway, she'd be mutter to him. Only in the case of a Koyin would she be also. So why is she returning the money of the Kiddushin? If the husband says, I don't care, I want to divorce you anyway, then why should she have to return the Kiddushin money? Again, it's not her fault. The Ella Ba'ishis Koyin Shenansa. So evidently, we have to be talking about it's not a Yisrael's wife, after all. It is a Koyin's wife. It is a Kohen's wife, and so now once she's raped, she becomes also to him, but it's not her fault. So therefore, so now, and therefore she doesn't forfeit her ksuba either. So now over kiddushin the tibuin nitnu kamiflagi. So the machloikas ultimately comes out to be about this point: is kiddushin money meant to be irrevocable, or are there cases where it's to be returned? Reb Meir Sava Kiddushin L'Tibuin Nitnu. Reb Meir holds that Kiddushin are meant L'Tibuin. They're meant as a. That's it. He gave it, and it's sunken in, and it doesn't get returned. So therefore, Reb Meir holds she's not going to have to return anything of that kicker. But in addition, she is entitled to her ksuba because after all, she's an Eishes Koyin. She's also to her husband, but it's not her fault. Therefore, she's going to. Therefore, she's entitled to collect uksuba. So therefore, the mayor says, as far as the money of kiddushin, it was given to her, and that's that. He has no ability to claw that back. As far as the ksuba, he has to pay it because, after all, she's in a situation where now they can't get married. And therefore, Rav Meir would say that she keeps the kiddushin and she gets her ksuba payment. Rabbi Yehuda Sava Lav L'Tibuin Nitnu. Rabbi Yehuda is going to hold that kiddushin are not meant L'Tibuin; they're not meant to be irrevocable. So she would have to return it. So fine, she's going to collect out of it whatever is necessary for her ksuba, but then the rest of it she has to return to him. Rabbi Yosi Misapkalei. As far as Rabbi Yosi, he has a suffix on that L'Tibuin Nitnu Eloi, whether the kiddushin are meant L'Tibuin or not. So therefore, V'Hilkach. Kidshab Esrim. Therefore, Rabbi Yosi is going to say like this: if he was Makadisher, Rabbi Yosi is using now. Before we use the scenario where he's Makadisher with a kicker, where again a kicker might be 25 mana, which would be 1,200 zuz. It might be 60 mana, which is it might be a kick. It might a kicker might be 60 mana, which would be 3,000, which would be 3,000 sella. It could be 25, as the Rashbam says over here. Part of the difference is also because the Gemara discusses elsewhere. There's a regular mana, and then there's a mana shel kodesh. There was a regular mana, and then there was a mana used by the Bais Hamikdash, which was twice as large. And plus, the Gemara mentions in some places that eventually the Chachamim enlarged it by 25. By the Chachamim enlarged it by 20%. We mentioned this earlier in the Masechta that the Chachamim have the ability to enlarge weights and measures and coins and whatever by up to 20%. So therefore, so the mana group, in short, if a regular mana is 25, Sloyim, which if a regular mana is 25 Sloyim, then a mana Shel Kodesh is more than after that change is more than twice that, and it comes out to 60. Whatever the case, for purposes of Al-Gemara, it doesn't make that much of a difference. The point is that it was far more than her Ksuba money. So therefore, again, according to the Meir, doesn't matter. She gets to keep all of it, plus she collects her Ksuba. According to the Yehuda, she pays out of that. She gets her Ksuba out of that and pays back the rest. So now Rabbi Yossi instead is going to give a different scenario with different amounts of money, and he's gonna say therefore because of the suffix, so we're gonna consider it's mamana mutal b'suffix, it's money where there's a suffix whether she has to return it back or not. So therefore, so Rabbi Yossi gives the following figures. Kidsha the Estrum, if he was Makadisha with 20 shkalim, which a shekel consists of 4 zuz, so therefore, so that would be 80 zuz. Then he has to pay her. He still has to pay off her ksuba. So therefore, he's going to have to give her 30 half shekels, which is going to equal 60 zuz. Meaning, in other words, because Rabbi Yossi is going to say like this. As far as the money of Kiddushin, we have a suffix whether she has to return it or not. So therefore, she's going to get to keep 40 zuz of it, and he's going to give the other 40 back to him. Meanwhile, now he owes her for, let's say she's an almana, she gets 100 zuz for her ksuba, so therefore he's going to have to give her another 60, the 40 that she's keeping, plus another 60 that he's going to owe her for her ksuba. Kidsha b'shloshim, and if he was makadisha with 30 shekel, which is 120 zuz, noisim la'estrim chatzoyim, then he's going to have to give her 20 half shekels, which is going to equal 40, same idea. In other words, what we do is we take the 30 shekel that he gave her, which comes out to 120 zuz, because there are 4 zuz to a shekel. She's going to keep 60 and give him 60 back. Now, though, she's an almana. She's owed 100 for huksuba. So therefore, he's going to have to pay her another 20 half shekels, which is going to equal 40, which is going to equal 40 zuz. So in other words, he's saying it's a suffix. Now, why is Rabbi Yossi using such strange ways of saying it, speaking in terms of halves? Why does he just say that? Why does he just say if he was Mekadosh with 20, then he gives her 15, and if he 15 Sela, which would be 60 zuz, and if it was Mekadosh with 30, then he gives her 10 Sela, which would be 40 zuz. So Tosfos explains that it was very common in those days to make their calculations in half shekels, in half sloim. So therefore, so Rabbi Yossi uses that kind of expression as well, even though uses that expression as well because it was a common enough way of saying it. The Ritva says because it's always tachos aloshen. He says it's like a good play on words. Like this, you're able to say when he gave her twenty, he has to give her 30. And when he gave her 30, he has to give her 20. So it's like a nice rhythm to it over there, and it helps you remember the din. So therefore, that's why it didn't say if he gave her 30, then now he has to give her another 15. And if he gave her 20, he has to give her another 15. And if he gave her 30, he has to give her another 10. That wouldn't be very memorable. But saying it like this, 30 and 20, 20 and 30 helps it and has a certain rhythm to it. Tosfos also deals with the question that you usually say when you have a suffix on money, you say, "Amotzi mechaver l'varaya." Why is Rabbi Yossi saying over here instead that they divide it and each of them gets half and she gives half of the Kiddushin money back to him because of the suffix? So Tosfos refers to something that they explained earlier in the Masechta, where they discussed that even though usually it's only Sumchus who says that Momen are multiple suffix choken, and usually the Chachamim disagree and say, "Amotzi mechaver l'varaya," but Tosfos says sometimes it depends in individual situations. The Chachamim have reason to say this is different than the usual case, and therefore we should say Yachloku. In other words, ultimately it depends on the judgment of the Chachamim in each particular scenario, what it would be appropriate to say when we say Yachloku, when we say Amotzi Mechaver L'Varaya, when we say other possibilities. So therefore, so Rabbi Yossi is taking it over here that this is one of those cases where it seems more logical to say Yachloku. So far in short, what we have is as follows. So we said Rebbe and Reb Nosson, Reb Yehuda Nosi and Reb Nosson argue about the point of whether you have to return the Kiddushin money. We said that Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda have a very similar machlokas, and Reb Yossi is not sure. So to recap, in other words, to recap, what we said so far is, if the chosen dies, then she never has to return. Then according to both Reb Nosson and Reb Yehuda HaNasi, she would not have to return the kiddushin, because we said they both agree. They both agree that she can say tnuli baili ve'esmachimai, and Reb Meir and Reb Nos and Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda apparently would hold of that as well. So therefore, never. So if he dies, then the kedushin money would never have to be returned. If she dies, then you have the machlokas Reb Nosson and Reb Yehuda Hanasi, and you also have a machlokas like that between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda. If he backs out, then the kedushin money is not returned. If she backs out, then we haven't discussed yet. The Gemara is going to talk about that soon. And then if she was raped, then it depends. If she's Yisrael, then the same din would be as if he backed out. If he chooses not to go ahead with the wedding because of that, then that's the equivalent of him backing out voluntarily, and he still has to, and he doesn't get the kedushin money back. And if it was an Eishes Kohen, then you have the machlokas of Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yossi. So the Gemara continues. Rabbi Yosef Baman Yumi, Rabbi Nachman, b'chol mokam shenagu lahachzir machzirin. In every place where the minig is to return the kedushin money, then they have to return it. The Targuma. Now they explain, when we say b'chol mokam, means specifically Nahavda, means the city of Nahavda in Bavel, where that was the minig. There was an interesting girsa that instead of the word b'chol, it's supposed to say Bavel. And in that case, the Gemara is saying that Bavel is one of those places where they regularly return the kedushin money in such circumstances. And they explain, it doesn't mean the entire country of Bavel, it means specifically Nahavda, which at that time was the center of Jewish life in Bavel. There's a similar expression in a different Gemara also, where you have something like that, where the Gemara does the same thing. It says, in Bavel, such and such, and the Gemara explains that it means Nahavda, so therefore that would be what it means over here as well. What about Shar Bavel Mai? What about in the rest of the country of Bavel? What's the minhag? So the answer is Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, Dami Tavayu, Muhari Hadri. So Rabba and Rabbi Yosef both say the Muhari, which are the Sivloinus that we talked about before, the gifts that the Chosen gives the Kala after the Kiddushin, those have to be returned, Kiddushin Loi Hadri, but the money of the Kiddushin does not have to be returned in the rest of Bavel. And in Nahavda, they have a local minhag to return it, but other than that, they don't. And the Gemara continues, Amara Papa, Hilchza, the bottom line halacha is, Ben Shem Neshu, Ben Shem Mesahi, whether the Chosin died, whether the Kala died, Hoder Behu, or if the Chosin changes his mind and decides to not go through with the Nisurin, but rather to divorce her, Muari Hadri, Kedushi Le Hadri, in all those cases, the Sivloinus get returned, but the Kedushin money do not. Hadra ba'ihi, but what about if she backs out and she doesn't want to get married, Afilu Kedushi Nami Hadri, then Rav Papa says, not only do the Sivloinus get returned, but even the money of the Kiddushin. Rashbam, by the way, points out Moihar may not actually be Sivloinus. He says, on the face of it, Moihar is Sivloinus, but then Rashbam says that no, they're actually different things, because later on the Gemara is going to also say in a connection with a later Mishnah that the Sivloinus has to be returned. So rather, Rashbam explains Moihar is money that he writes already in the Ksuba during the time of the Erusin. He writes that he promises to give her such and such when they get married. So therefore, it's called Moihar in the sense that they're doing maher, they're hurrying up and writing it ahead of time, whereas Sivloinus is just presents that he gives her that are not written into the Ksuba. Anyway, so again, Rav Papa is saying that if either of them died, or if he backs out, then the Moihari have to be returned to him, whether we understand Moihari is just meaning Sivloinus, or whether we understand it, like the Rashbam is saying, that it means things that he promised in the Ksuba, that he's going to give her afterwards. Either way, those get returned, Kiddushi Lo Hadri, but the money of Kiddushin is not returned. Hadri ba'ihi, but if she backs out and she wants to get, then she doesn't want to get married and she wants a divorce, after the kiddushi nami hadri, then Rav Papa says even the kiddushin money also gets returned. Amema says even that kiddushi le hadri, even that, even in that case, the kiddushin money never gets returned. And the reason is gzeira. It's true in principle it ought to be returned. After all, the kedushin money was meant as there was a business deal kind of over here. You're going to get married to me, and in return, I'm giving you X amount of money, much more than the pruta that you need for kedushin. And in return, we're going to get married. But now she's backing out. In principle, we ought to have said that she has to return the kedushin money. But Amema says gzeira shemayomer kedushin tofsin ba'achosa. If she returns the kedushin money, people are going to think that there was never any kedushin in the first place. If later on he's mekadesh her sister or any other relative of hers, then people are going to think that the kedushin are tofus, when in fact they're not, because her sister, as long as she's alive, is an erva to him. And the same thing with other relatives as well. People are going to think that the kedushin were based on a toast originally, and they never actually went through. So therefore, to prevent that, we don't want the kedushin money to be returned. So again, the Rambam had said, if the kedushin themselves were kedushin toast, then the money is returned. Namely, in other words, where he thought that it could be kedushin, and now it turns out that for whatever reason, the kedushin are not going to be toifus. The Gemara actually discusses in a number of places, you have a case, a Makadish Achoisa. Suppose a good person gives money to his sister for Kedushin, where everybody knows you can't be Makadish your sister. So then we assume he gave it to her as a gift, or as a gift, or as a pikodin, or something like that. In any case, we're saying that, but I mean, anyway, Amema is saying over here that on the contrary, here the Kedushin themselves were valid, and then she decides she doesn't want to go through with it, she doesn't want to get married. It's true, she should have to return the money, but we don't on the grounds of this Gzera, because we don't want people to think that then he's able to be Mekadesh and to marry her sister. So the Gemara continues. Rav Ashi says that's not a problem. After all, the get shows the very fact that she received a get shows that there was erusin. A get wouldn't be necessary if there hadn't been kedushin in the first place. So therefore, Rav Ashi says there's no reason that she shouldn't have to return the kedushin. However, the Gemara says, "V'hadir Rav Ashi bedusahi." However, this that Rav Ashi is saying is bedusa. We have this expression bedusa in a number of places in Shas. We had it actually earlier in our. It comes up here and there in Shas. I don't think we had it earlier in our Masechta, but whatever, it comes up here and there. The Gemara uses it to say that what Rav Ashi said is not correct. So bedusa literally means a fiction, means something that somebody made up. Some of the Mefoshim explain that maybe Rav Ashi himself didn't say this, but rather Talmidim said it and attributed it to him wrongly. In other places, the Gemara uses the expression berusa, something outside, meaning which is a bit more of a respectful way of saying it, that this is something that belongs outside the Beis Medrash, but not in it. But there's something wrong with what Rav Ashi is saying, because you might have some people who heard that she returned him the kedushin money, but they haven't heard that she received a get, and they're going to mistakenly think that kedushin tofsin ba'achosa, that if he's mekadesh her sister, that the kedushin would be chal, and they wouldn't be chal because there was kedushin over here. Yes, the money was returned, but nevertheless there was kedushin over here. So therefore we can't accept what Rav Ashi is saying. We have to say that the money has to be returned regardless.
In reality, if there was a get, is he allowed to marry his sister?
No, that's the point. As long as she's alive, as long as the woman that he was originally Mekadosh is alive, he's not allowed to be Mekadosh of sister. And if she does, then Kedushin are not Tophis.
That's only even if there's only Edison.
Even if there's only what, Aegis?
Aegerson.
Yeah. Even if there's only Aegerson, yeah.
Okay.
So ultimately, with that said, I mean, Reb Levick, that Eva's father points out in some places, you know, ultimately what Rav Ashi is saying is still part of the Torah. After all, we have it written in the Gemara for us over here. So when we call it bedusa, on one level, it still means it's still part of Torah. All we're saying is the same Torah that said that it's part of Hashem's Chochmah, and Hashem's Chochmah also tells us to consider this bedusa and not to accept it lahalacha. So therefore, the bottom line is that in all cases, the kedushin money is always going to be returned. There's no exceptions. With the exception of what we said, that we said that the only ultimately the only case where the so ultimately no, we say the kedushin money is always is always kept by the kala. There's no case where she has to return it unless it was actual kedushin toros, unless there was an actual toros in the kedushin itself. Fine. So the Gemara continues. Let's get back to the matter of Shushvinus. We talked in the Mishnah about Shushvinus, and we digress to talk about this whole matter of returning the Kedushin money and Tnuli Baili, the Esmachima, and all of that. So now getting back to the matter of Shushvinus, the Mishnah had said, Shushvinus nigbis bebeistin. Shushvinus can be collected in Beistin, meaning if Reuven, again, if Reuven participated in Shimon's wedding and gave him a present towards it, then later on, when Reuven gets married, then Shimon is obligated to also give him a gift and participate. And if not, then Reuven can actually take Shimon to Beistin and demand it, under the conditions that we're going to say now in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Tanarabana, Chamisha dvorim nemru b'shushvinus. There are five dinim that apply to Shushvinus. Nigbus be based in. First of all, it can be collected and based in, as we said. It's considered an actual debt. Number two, v'chazeres ba'inosa. It's returned only in its time, meaning it's not something Reuven gave a present to Shimon for his wedding, and therefore you can say anytime he wants, you know what, Shimon, you owe me that amount. No, we say that we say it's meant only. It is in effect a loan, but it's a loan that's meant to take effect. It's a loan that's meant to be paid back only when Reuven himself gets married. So nigbus ba'inasa, it's collected only in its time, meaning not just any old time that Reuven wants the money, but davka. When it's the dafka, when the time for it comes.
If the guy never remarries, he just doesn't get the money back.
If the guy never marries, then yeah, he's not going to get the money back. And we learned also, we had the case where the shushvin passes away, and we said that he can say tnuli shushvini the esmachimo. So there is actually a machlokas we've shown him on that detail. If the shushvin passes away, whether payment has to be done or not. So we said if in our scenario, for example, that Reuven had given to Shimon, and Shimon is ready to repay Reuven when Reuven gets married, but Reuven dies before that, and he could say tznuli shushvini ve'esmachimai. So what about, you have a machlokas we've shown him, what about the other way around? What happens if the recipient dies what happens if Shimon dies and then Reuven gets married? Would Shimon's yorshim have to give Reuven the shushvinos or not? So the Ramban says they are obligated to, and a number of Rishonim, the Rimigash and the Rambam and so forth, disagree and say that no, they wouldn't need to. But in any case, over here also the Rashba points out that given that again Reuven might pass away before the Shushvinus is ever paid back, so therefore it's not necessarily a loan that's going to be paid back. So therefore, he's only obligated to pay. But Inosa, you can't tell Shimon in advance. He can't tell Shimon, pay me in advance, because Shimon can say, I mean, he wouldn't, hopefully he wouldn't say something so crudely. But basically, the idea is, in other words, look, you might not live to see your wedding, and therefore, I'm not obligated to pay you until that actually happens. Anyway, so but actually, the Rashba points out another thing as well. Even if, what about if they both agree that he should give it to him ahead of time? Still, not or what if it's not if they both agree? What if Shimon says, you know what? Fine, it's true, I'm not obligated to pay it back to you yet because you're not getting married. But you know what? I want to just do it. I want to get it off my head. Nevertheless, Reuven can actually say, you know what? The fact is, I gave it to you as a wedding present, and that made it a greater covered for you by your chuppah. I want it back at the same time, specifically when it'll go towards my covered at my chuppah. So therefore, Reuven has a right to refuse it at that point and to say that Shimon should pay it only when he, Reuven, gets married. All right, so all that is included in Chazeres Ba'inasa, that it's returnable only at the particular time when Reuven is getting married. The Ein Ba Mishum Ribis, another din that applies to Shushvinus, is that Ribis does not apply to it because it's not that kind of loan. In other words, so if Reuven gave Shimon $100, and Shimon, when he's returning the Shushvinus, gives Reuven $200, it's not considered Ribis because it's not that kind of loan. There was no expectation that he's going to give him a certain amount. So therefore, Ribis doesn't apply. The Eina Shvius Mishamatza, another din that applies to Shushvinos, is that Shvius, that Shmita, does not cancel it. If so Shimon had gotten married and Reuven sent him Shushvinos, now later on, after Shmita, Reuven is getting married, then Shimon is still obligated to pay it to him. The Gemara is going to work out now. After we go through this brisa, we're going to explain each of these why the din is the way it is. And the fifth one, v'ena b'chor notable pishnayim, a b'chor does not get a double portion in the case, as we mentioned in the Mishnah, where the shushvinus is paid back to the family as a whole. Then the b'chor does not get a double portion of it. So let's work out each of these things. Nigris b'beistin. Why is the shushvinus collectible in beistin? My timer. Kimova damia, because it's considered like a loan. Because a person sends a gift like that, the understanding is that it's going to be this kind of mutual aid, this kind of mutual aid kind of thing. I helped you with your wedding expenses, and therefore, in return, you're going to help me when it comes the time for my wedding expenses. So in fact, the Rashbam brings that there are versions, there were kisveyad of the Gemara that actually mentioned over here that it also explains why chazeres ba'inosa, why it's payable davka at the time when he's getting married. The idea is that it was a loan that was meant to, you're going to pay me back when I have my simcha, and therefore, in other words, normally you lend somebody money and you tell me you're going to pay me back in a month or a year or whatever it is. But here you're saying, in effect, I'm lending you money and you're going to pay me back when I'm getting married as well. So it can actually be collected and based in. We said ve'en b'mashum ribis. Why does ribis not apply to it? Delava died to the hachi yavle, because not giving it to him with the understanding that he's going to give him more. He has greater simcha. He's participating in his friend's simcha, and after all, he doesn't have to give him more. He could conceivably have given him less. So ribis doesn't apply to that. It's not. It is considered like a loan, but not that kind of loan. Next, ve'ena shvius meshamatza. Why does Shmita not cancel it? Because when does Shmita cancel a debt? Only when it's possible for him. The pasuk says, lo yigos, you should not demand the debt from the other person. Meaning, in other words, so here the Torah is telling you, you had until Shmita to demand the collection of the debt. Now that you didn't, then it's lost. Then that's forfeited. But over here, the fact is, he can't go to him and say, you have to pay me back anytime he wants, because again, it only applies when he's going to get married. So the Rashbam compares it to a case in Masechta Makos, where the Gemara says over there that if a person lent money to somebody else with a 10-year term, then Shvius doesn't cancel it, even though obviously 10 years always includes a Shmittah, because he's not able to collect it from him during that 10 years. So until the 10 years are up, it's impossible to say, lo yigos, don't demand from him the debt, because you can't demand it from him during that time anyhow. And therefore, Shmittah wouldn't apply. So in the same way over here, he can't say anytime he wants, give me my money to pay for what I gave you for your wedding, because the fact is, it's meant to only apply once he, Reuven, is getting married. In fact, Tosfos discusses in that connection the halacha in that regard, which when we get to Masechta Makos, Bez Hashem, we'll talk about the various lashonas in the Gemara over there about when such debts are canceled and when not. Tosfos also points out that it means, in other words, that. In effect, we're saying that Shushvinus is, in a way, it's like a debt, but in a way, it's not. Because as the Gemara is going to point out, there are various cases where the Shushvinus is not going to have to be payable at all, as the Gemara is going to work out over here soon, as opposed to a milveh in general is going to have to be paid off. So you could argue that maybe the halacha is not like that. Maybe a milveh for 10 years does get canceled by Shmita, but here, not only is it a milveh with an open-ended term when he gets married, but also there's going to be many cases where he doesn't have to pay it back at all, some of which we've already discussed, and more which the Gemara is going to go on to discuss. Anyway, continues the Gemara. The Braisa said, "Ve'ena b'chor notal pishnayim, a b'chor does not get a double portion of it." Why not? As we said before, "Dehavalei roi," because it's not something that's in the father's possession now when he dies. It only comes later. And as we learned in the previous parak, we said that a b'chor does not get a double portion of roi like he would of muchzak. We learned that from a pasuk over there. So therefore here it's only roi. It's something that's going to come to them eventually, but it's not necessarily, it's not in his hands yet, and therefore b'chor does not get a double portion of it. Tosfos also points out again that it's one thing you could talk about a loan. We learned about in the previous perek that maybe a loan, maybe the father had there's an outstanding loan owed to the father. Maybe a bechor gets a double portion of that. Fine, but at least it's money that the father is definitely going to be getting in payment of the loan, or almost definitely going to be getting in payment of the loan. Whereas over here, again, shushvinus is something where not necessarily is it ever going to be paid back. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Omer of Kahana. So Rav Kahana says the general rule of Shushvinus is as follows. Hava b'mosa, if the person who's supposed to pay the Shushvinus back, so again, in our scenario, we have Reuven had previously given Shushvinus to Shimon. Now Reuven is getting married and Shimon is supposed to reciprocate. If Shimon is in town at the time of the wedding, then he's supposed to come to the Simcha and bring the Shushvinus. And if not, then Reuven can take him to Beis Din and demand it. What about even if he wasn't in town itself, Shama Kol Tavla, if he heard the sound of the bells, they would ring bells to tell everybody the wedding is taking place, everybody come. So if he heard that, Ibola the Mesa, then also nowadays, I guess the equivalent would be where you get a reminder on WhatsApp or whatever. But anyway, the point is, if he heard that announcement that the wedding is taking place and you should come to the Simcha, Ibola the Mesa, then he's still supposed to come. What about Loy Shoma Kol Tavla? What if he didn't hear it because he was out of town? Then we expect the Chosin would have to inform the Shushvin. So Reuven would have to inform Shimon, personally, you should know my wedding is on such and such a date. Please be here for it. And if not, Tarumas Islay, then Shimon has a valid claim, has a claim in Beis Din that he can complain. He can say, you know what, you're not a very good friend that you didn't remind me that your wedding is taking place. Nevertheless, Shalumi Mishalim, nevertheless, he would have to pay the Shushvinus. Because the fact is that Reuven has now gotten married, and the expectation is that Shimon is going to reciprocate what Reuven had given him previously. Well, the Gemara asks Vad Kama, okay, but how much is he going to have to pay? The fact is, If he had been there, on the one hand, he'd be bringing the present, but the fact is he didn't eat there, so therefore he saved the chosin money, the fact that he didn't have to make the fact that he didn't have to make food for him. So how much does he have to pay? Amar Abaya, Nogu Bnei Gnona. The people involved with chasanas have the following minhag. Gnona is a word for a chuppah, like you have legani legnuni, like we have in Bossi legani. Anyway, so the minhag is as follows. Ad zuza, if the money that he would have brought is up to or including a zuz, then he doesn't have to pay anything. Isa bakape achla bakarse, because what he would have brought with his hand instead would be offset by what he ate with his stomach. The Rashbam brings another girsa, not bekarse with his stomach, but bekase, which would also mean his stomach, like Meloshin besakosis, one of the parts of the stomach. In any case, the point is, in other words, in that case, again, he was out of town, and therefore he didn't come to the wedding, and the chosin didn't inform him. So nevertheless, then he's potter from paying shushvinus, because he can say to the chosin, look, you know, I would have been eating a zuz of your food, instead you saved of that, so instead I was going to bring you a zuz of shushvinus, so it cancels each other out. Ad arba, if the amount he was going to give for shushvinus is up to four zuz, mishalem palga, then we say he should pay half of the shushvinus, because we assume if he's bringing a larger shushvinus, then he would eat a larger amount of money. So in other words, the bare minimum he would ever eat is a zuz's worth, but if he's bringing more, then he would feel more expansive and he would eat more, so therefore he would eat two zuz. Mikan ve'elach, inish kachashivus, say, if the shushvinus was going to be any larger than that, then it depends on each person's chashivus, and we figure out how much he would have eaten, and we deduct that from the shushvinus. So you have actually within that you have a machlokas who's shown him. The Rimigash says that if he the Rimigash learns our Gemara to be saying that if Shimon wasn't in town at the time of the Simcha, then we're what Tarumas? Then there was no reason for him to complain. He has to pay the Shushvinus, and that's that. You can't expect that Reuven would have sent a messenger to tell him that the wedding is taking place. But the Rambam says that. But the Rambam phrases it differently. And says that that even if he wasn't in town, even if the Bala Simcha called him, or you have even the Rambam describes, you have a place where the minhag is that the Bala Simcha sends messengers to bring the Shushvin. If he didn't, then the Shushvin would have a reason for the complaint, and then he's entitled to deduct the amount. So you have a machlokas who showed him about the details within this. The Rashbam also, the Rashbam uses the expression that he's deducting from the Shushvinus because he didn't eat with him. So therefore, we're talking about even if he was in town and didn't come, he'd still be able to take off the money of the Suda, which would be more like the Rimigash and not so much like the Rambam. All right, the Gemara continues. Tonan Abanan. By the way, this kind of thing is probably why the institution of Shushvinus eventually broke down. You have all these cases where you could claim it, where you can't claim it, or whatever. It probably caused more trouble than it's worth. So nowadays, you have people give presents for somebody's chasana, of course, but there's no expectation specifically. There's no legal obligation specifically that the other guy is going to give you back later on when you get married. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Tanan Abanan. What happens if Shimon's wedding, for example, was done in public, was done as a big public spectacle? Now later on, when Reuven is getting married, he wants to make a more modest wedding. It could be because it was a time. It could be because it was a time of tzara. It could be because he doesn't have because it could be because he just wants to make a smaller and cheaper wedding. So then Shimon can say to him, you know what, if you're going to make a big public wedding, then I would for a big simcha, then I'm that I would like that, and that's when I'll give you the shushvinus. But if you're going to make a smaller scale wedding for whatever reason, then I shouldn't be obligated to pay you the shushvinus. Similarly, also Bibsula, if Reuven participated in Shimon's wedding and gave him a present for it when Shimon was marrying a Bibsula, or Bikish Lasis Imibalmana, and now Reuven is going to marry an Almana and he wants Shimon to participate to pay off his Shushvinus, Yocholoy. Again, Shimon can say, Bibsula, Eseimach, I'm only going to do it with you. If you marry a Bibsula, like the way Kader Shosisimi, like the way when I got married. But here it's less of a Simcha when it comes to an Almana, so therefore. For I'm not obligated to pay Shushvinus. Now the Rambam writes in this that in general it has to be exactly the same. If it's any kind of difference, then he can't claim the Shushvinus. The Rama says, and the Tur brings that actually only if the second simcha is less than the first one. So in other words, the Rambam would say, what about the other way around? If Shimon was marrying an Almana. And Reuven now later on is marrying a Basula, then the Rambam would say, still Shimon can say, I'm not obligated to pay the Shushvinus, whereas the Rama and the Tur say that he would, because there's a greater Simcha in this case. Similarly, if Reuven participated and paid towards Shimon's wedding and paid Shushvinus when Shimon was marrying a second wife, and now Reuven is getting married to his first wife. You can tell him, you know what? When you get married to a second wife, then I'll do it with you. Because again, maybe I don't want such a great simcha. And similarly, if he's marrying one wife and now and Shimon married one wife and now Reuven is going to marry that is going to be marrying two wives one after the other, so you give me half of the shushvinus for each one. So again, Shimon can tell him, when you're marrying only one wife like I did, then I'll give you the shushvinus, and fine, since already you're marrying two wives and it's too late to do that, so it means Rabbeinu Gershom says, fine, in the future, if you marry off your son or whatever to one wife, then I'll pay off the shushvinus then. I'll do it with you when there's one wife involved, like you did for me, but I don't want to get involved with I don't want to get involved when there's two wives. Tosfos brings a girsa the other way around, where Reuven had given Shimon Shushvinus when he was marrying two wives, And now he's saying, I'm marrying only one wife. So you can say, in other words, when you marry a second wife, then I'll give you shushvinus for the both of them. I'm not going to give it all for this one woman. In any case, the point is, in other words, that there's a lot of cases, as we said, where shushvinus is not necessarily going to be paid off. And therefore, that also brings us to what we said earlier on the Amud, that therefore, there's a lot of dinim of shushvinus, even though in a certain sense it's a loan, there's a lot of dinim that don't apply to it like they do to a regular loan, precisely because, as Tosfos is pointing out, there are many cases where it's actually never going to be paid back. Because he has no chiyuv to pay it back, and therefore we can't consider it like a regular loan where you're always paying back no matter what. So the Gemara brings in this connection, having brought this word pumbi, which is a bit of an unusual word. It means in public. So now the Gemara brings a little agadah that involves this word pumbi. Tana Rabbanan, atu nichsin atu pumbi. When you have a person who is rich in possessions and rich in public possessions, meaning that Ashbam says, so he's rich because he has fields and vineyards and olive groves or whatever, those are all things that people can see. Or he has atu pumbi, he has, for example, his wealth is in animals where everybody knows about them. Zehu bal hagodes, we can compare that to a person who knows agadta, because agadta is something very, very popular. People come from all over the place to listen to agadta. So therefore, so in other words, he's able to daushin in it wherever he goes, because you're always going to have, there's always going to be a big interest in agadta. So therefore, he's comparable to a person who's very publicly rich. Atu silim atu tekoya, if he's rich in sloyim, in money. So for example, the Rashbam says he's a money changer and he's making his parnasa with various kinds of coins. Atu tekoya, he's a rich person of tekoya. The Rashbam says two possibilities. Tekoya can mean that he's rich in real estate. Tekoya would mean fixed in place, like the Yaakov Toka as Olay. Then the Rashbam's second explanation is Tekoya is the name of a place where they produce a lot of olive oil. So therefore, so here you have a person who's constantly doing wheeling and dealing with money or with real estate or with oil, as the case may be. Such a person can be compared Zeo Bal Pilpul. This is like a person who knows Pilpul. He knows how to analyze and come up with all kinds of deep discussions in Torah. So he's not as popular as the Baal Agoda, because not everybody is going to be able to follow his pilpul. But nevertheless, also it's like he's constantly earning money. He's constantly gaining something from his pilpul, just like a person who's constantly wheeling and dealing and gaining from his money or from the oil that he sells. Atu meshach atu kamas. Then you have a person who is rich in measure, meaning, in other words, that you have, for example, grain, where he has a stock of grain and he measures it out. And the word meshach that Ashbam says is an Aramaic word meaning to measure. So he's rich in things that are measured. So grain, for example, you store it away, and when it comes the time, then you start selling it in certain amounts. Atu kamas, and he's rich in things that are hidden, because this is like the grain, which is hidden away in his storehouses. Zeo bal shmuis, then that we can compare to a person who knows a lot of statements in Torah, a lot of statements of Amiroyim. So he knows a lot of halachas and statements of Amiroyim. So when it comes the time, just like the grain dealer, for example, when it's the time, then he's going to open up his storehouse and start selling. The same way, this person, when it comes the time, then he's going to start giving forth everything that he knows in Torah that he learned from the Amiroyim. Because Hakol Tzrichim, the Morei Chitya, Gemara, ultimately everybody needs the one who has the wheat. Grain is the most essential staple for a person. And the same way, that would be a person who knows Gemara, so not just he knows Shmuas, not just he knows statements from the Amiroyim, but he knows how to analyze them and come up with conclusions in Halacha. So it's not like the Baal Pilpul, who has the ability to analyze very, very deeply, but he has the ability. The Baal Gemara is somebody who knows the methodology of the Gemara, how to analyze a Mishnah and a Braisa and come up with conclusions. And everybody needs him, because ultimately that's what you need in order to pass in halacha. Marsha brings over here from the Aruch, who gives a bit of a different explanation. The first type, the Atir Pumbi, is the one, for example, who's rich because, for example, he makes his parnasa with wool, which is something that's again very bulky and very visible. So that would be the Baal Agada, because everybody that his Agada that he teaches is very popular. Then you have the one who's rich in money. It's not so it's not so exposed and open to everybody, because after all, money has to be kept away safely, but it has to be kept. We learned in Bava Metzia, for example, it's supposed to be buried in the ground. But eventually, he does need to take it out for his money changing business, and therefore that he brings it out. So that's like the Baal Pilpul, where he doesn't he. It's not always visible, but when he gets into a pilpul, then you see what then you see the riches that he has. Then you have the third kind, which is where we said his wealth is hidden. Like, for example, his wealth is in precious stones and pearls, where a person hides them away. That would be the Baal Shmuis. He has lots of halachas and lots of statements in Torah that he knows, but only when it's necessary does he reveal them. So therefore, it's like the person who has diamonds and jewels and things like that, where normally he keeps them hidden, and he brings them out only where it's the appropriate time to. So we're saying then that so we're saying that there are different kind there are different levels of people within learning Torah. So the Gemara continues a little more on that subject. Amar Abzeira, Amar Rab, my dichtiv kol yemei oni yiroyim. The pasuk says in Mishlei, all the days of the whole pasuk goes in Mishlei, kol yemei oni yiroyim. All the days of the poor person are bad. But toiv leiv mishta tamid, and a person with a good heart, it has a constant feast. Now, what's bothering the Gemara is that Oni and Toiv Lev are not opposites. If it meant to actually point out a contrast between the poor and the rich, then it should say Kol Yemei Oni Roim V'Osher Mishta Tamid. So, what is the Oni versus the Toiv Lev? So, the Gemara is going to bring a bunch of explanations of it. So Omer Abzeira, Omer Rav, My Dichtiv Kol Yemei Oni Roim Zebal Talmud. That refers to the person who focuses on Talmud, which is Gemara. So he he's going to come out, as we just said, he's going to come out with being able to pass in the halacha. But the fact is, it's a big tircha. It takes tremendous effort to master the methodology of Gemara and to understand how to take Mishnayos and Braises and reconcile them with one another. So that kind of thing is like a poor person. He's always having a difficult time of it, always having to hurt over his Gemara. But Tov Lev Mishta Tamid, Zabal Mishnah, when it says the person with a good heart is a constant feast, is somebody who focuses on Mishnah, which is much easier because Mishnah is more straightforward. It's just black letter halachas. On the other hand, Rava Omer Ipcha. Rava says the other way around. The Baal Mishnah is the Kol Yemei Oni Yiroyim. He's the one who has a difficult time of it. Sure, he learns lots of Mishnayos, but the fact is, he can't pask in halacha from those Mishnayos. Anytime he wants to know what the halacha is, he can't. Because he can't do that. As opposed to the Baal Gemara is Toiv Lev Mishta Tamid, that he knows the reasoning behind the Mishnayos, and he's able to understand where the Mishnah is used halacha lemaisa and where it's not. So therefore, he's the one with the good time of it. In fact, we also find that which the Maharsha sure explains that they're not really arguing. What they're actually arguing is on the real argument is like this. You have a Gemara at the end of Elam Metzias that says that a Talmud Chacham, even if he makes a mistake in Halacha, because he's on such a high level and he should have known better, then it's considered for him as if he did b'mezi. So therefore, so we're saying, so the Baal Talmud has always reason to be worried. What if he's going to be over? And he might be over on something even b'shogeg, and it's considered like b'mezid. As opposed to the Baal Mishnah, he's going to think to himself, he's very happy go lucky. He's not worried about, because he figures, what do I have to worry about? I know what the Mishnah says. Rav is saying the other way around. Fakir, the Baal Mishnah is going to be careless, and he's not going to know the halacha, and he's going to end up making mistakes. As opposed to the Baal Talmud, on the contrary, knows how to be careful and avoid such mistakes. Behind the Amr of Mesharshia, Meshmei the Rava. Thus, the Mesharshia says in the name of Rava to bear out this point that a Baal Gemara is better off than the Baal Mishnah. My dichtiv, what does it mean in a pasuk? Masia avonim ye'otzer behem. A person who moves around stones is going to get saddened by them, meaning he's going to be putting in a lot of effort, but he's not getting anything out of it. Brekeya etzim yiskochen bom. But a person who chops wood is going to be warmed up by it. The word yisochen comes from a word that means heat. Masia avonim ye'atzer behen eva bala mishnah. When it says the one who moves around stones is going to get upset, is going to get saddened by them, like the sovan techlena, like the Rashbam says, like the other pasuk, you're going to eat bread with tremendous effort and toil. So he's going to toil and put in a lot of effort, but he doesn't get anything for it. Elu Bali Mishnah. That refers to the people who specialize in Mishnah. Because again, they learn lots of Mishnayos. They know a lot, but they can't actually use it lahalacha. So it's like moving around stones. Ultimately, you don't get anything out of it. Maharsha points out one thing he does get out of it, at least, is the Yetzer Hara is compared to a stone. So therefore, at least he does get out of it that he moves around the stone and at least is getting rid of his Yetzer Hara. But again, he's not going to be able to understand the halacha, what to actually do. So it helps him with Sur Meira, but not necessarily with Vaseh Toiv. But when it says the one who chops wood is going to get warmed up by it, refers to the one who's expert in Talmud. He's actually, it's like chopping wood. You put in a lot of effort, but at the end of it, you have a nice fire to warm yourself by. And the same way, the Baal Gemara puts in a lot of effort to understand the Gemara. Not only does it help him to keep his Yetzer Hara at bay, but he's also like a wood chopper where now he can warm himself by it. And Maharsha also adds, it's like when you chop wood, now you have also little slivers of wood that help make the fire burn more brightly. And therefore that represents that he has Talmidim, as we have him with Talmidei Yosef Mikulam, that he's able to learn from his Talmidim to become greater and greater in knowledge of Torah, where he wouldn't have if he taught only Mishnah. So we had brought one drasha on this pasuk, on the pasuk Kol Yemei Oni Roim V'Tov Lev Mishnah Tamid. So we'll continue tomorrow. Be'ez Hashem, the Gemara is going to bring several other drashas on that pasuk.